Hey, welcome to A Course in Miracles, and welcome to my library. If you want to borrow a book.
Yeah, library before.
Is that Bookshop Santa Cruz?
Okay, let's get on this. All right, welcome everybody. We are we're studying a wonderful piece of the book that points the finger back at you for your awakening, like the whole book does, really. But this is one passage that is really specifically saying you are responsible. And once you start to realize what you are and what holds you, once you realize what holds you, once you realize your context, you know what context is? Context versus content. Background
one inner, one outer.
Say again?
One's inner, one outer.
Yeah. Well, is that how you put things together?
Yeah, one's
foreground versus background.
Right.
You know, when you say a word only has meaning, you only know what a word means when you have it in context of the sentence, mm-hmm. how it's being used. The context is the place in which the foreground is appearing.
What if it's just a one-word sentence?
Well, that may be sufficient to give you a feeling of what's being said because the whole sentence provides a context for that word. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when you understand what context you are actually in, the real you, you start to appreciate that it being your responsibility, what's it? Your happiness. What's it? Your freedom. What's it? Your awakening. This is when you recognize that this actually is your responsibility for a very good reason, you no longer start hoping things will change without you. It's a folly on the spiritual journey that somehow, some way, you will be saved. That somehow some spirit or God or a lightning bolt or luck or fate will come change you. And then you'll be free. And then you'll be happy. This is actually a folly on your spiritual path. This will block you. This hope that something will happen to you that is good will block you. It is the ego's dream of separation, making a spiritual ego. That there is something out there that will be good for you that you have to wait for. It's in time. It's separate. And everything about it is opposite to your truth. It's disempowering. Disempowering for you to be waiting for some power outside of you to come help you. Or even to teach you. It's disempowering. There's only one teacher you'll ever meet. It is you. You may see it appear in another. There's not another. There's not another teaching you. When the truth is true, and it's everywhere all the time, when you actually come across the truth, it will not be out there. Of course, right? That's how you discover something's really true. It, because you have this feeling, this sense that it's somehow aligned with you. It's already there. So, all this is to say that the section we're studying is really, really, really important. And it's many different levels of understanding for your personal responsibility it, you know, like I say, you know, at first the ego thinks, well, this is bad news because, you know, I can't be responsible for my life. I've made a mess of it. And I didn't choose cancer. I didn't choose the pain. I didn't choose my neighbor. I didn't choose, et cetera. So these can be fighting words. But, you know, as you start to trust the Course of Miracles and you look for the happiness on this page that you found on all the other pages, that would take some faith, right? But you have it. That's why you keep coming back to the book. And so this responsibility is required. There's no changing it. But it is really good news. It is really good news that there is only one path for you and your awakening. There is only one path. This is how simple it is. It is a glorious path. The ego would not see it as a glorious path. The ego wants somebody else to do it. But if you, what you really are, and what you are right now, is an extension of all the power there is, there would not be another power that would come save you. There would not be. It can't be. It can't be. So I want you to take the next couple of minutes. And like I say, you know, we're coming at this at several different angles, scooping up some of the many ways to discuss these italics on page 448. And tonight we're going to start with just another aspect that I know it's a broken record, okay? But remember, this particular teaching, in the whole Course of Miracles, but this page, several different levels of teaching are on this page. And so just pick up what you can. For some of you, it's well below you. Some of you, it's a bit a reach. But check it out. What's waiting for you or rehearse and celebrate with me what you already found on this page. So now we're going to touch on a single word for our meditation. It is holiness. Holiness. Just going to ask you to spend the next couple of minutes finding out what you think or believe or know holiness to be. And then let's teach each other. What is holiness? What does that word mean? It's all over the place when you start getting into this pursuit. Holiness. What does it mean to you? What is holiness? Is it a shortcut for something? Is it a handle? Is it a name? Is it an experience? What is holiness to you? What is unholiness? Do you know that when you see it or feel it? Something is unholy or blocking holiness? Do you have a holiness sensor? Some way, somehow, you are drawn to holiness or you respect holiness or know holiness. What does it mean to you? And finally, pick a word or a phrase or share with us an idea that came to you about holiness. Collect your thoughts and teach us something in a moment as we go around. What is holiness to you? One of these guiding words that we might throw around a bit without thinking about what it really means to us. But this can be leverage for you to start to own a meaning for holiness, since it is in this book. It'll help you know where you are, and it'll help you to work the material and challenge the material when you start to own these words, and we all help each other get a feel for what this might mean in A Course in Miracles tonight. Luann, I got your mute. Would you tell us, what does holiness mean to you?
Well, at first it was a very complicated thing, and then it got simpler and simpler the longer I was with it. And this is what it ended up. You kind of mentioned that we're all on our own path towards awakening. And so I figure, and that I believe that basically that whenever I'm feeling love, I'm in a holy instant. And since I'm on my path, and there is no such thing as time, that I'm in the midst of a holy instant all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And holiness is being there. Holiness for me is moving along in my path, mm-hmm. which, since there's no time, I'm doing.
Well, I guess when you do go into the holy instance and the moments where you recognize for real, mm-hmm. when you recognize that there is no time, there is an alignment with holiness that has to occur.
Right. And it's more obvious when it's a holy instant, but I think it's there all the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Good.
Even when I'm not feeling loving, for instance, I think that I'm going to say, okay, this doesn't feel all that good. And even that's a holy instant for me to realize that.
What's unholy mean?
Well, that was a good one too. Unholy means, I think I had it when you said it, but now I'm going to have to go to a different definition because that's what's coming to me. Unholy is when I'm not wanting to be on this path. Not that I'm not on it, but it's when I'm not wanting to be on it.
Nice, nice. Misalignment with your path. That's good. It's good. Thank you. Ross, I got your mute for you. Tell us about, what does it mean to you, holiness? What does that mean?
What came up for me is I don't know. And the only thing I got is wholeness. So wholeness, oneness is holiness. But I really don't know. That's been a stumbling block word for me. I mean, it brings up connotations of some priest with a big hat swinging incense back and forth, chanting like
special,
pretending he's holy. And I'm like, that isn't holy.
Because whatever is holy would be somehow privileged and would have to wear a nice big hat to show that this one is holy. Yeah. Good, good. Masako, welcome. You have a couple of minutes to figure out what holiness means to you.
Oh.
It's we're coming toward you any minute. So, Tim, this word holiness, you've probably said it 1,000 times. What I got your mute. What does it mean to you?
I tend to be literal. Excuse my pedanticism. Holy takes me to the word whole with the W in front. To be whole is to be complete in all your parts, not missing anything. So holiness is the state of being all together. You've got it all correct. You're not missing any piece of it. I'm reminded by a line in the Tao Te Ching that says, how do we go from the Tao, which was a state of oneness, wholeness, to this, you know, big flaming mess that we see when we look around the world? And the line goes, well, the one became two, and then the two became the 10,000 things. So once you move away from the oneness, suddenly you've got binary, and then that just goes nuts, right? Every direction. So to be whole is to be in that place before that fracture from unity ever manifests itself, or seemingly manifests itself. It never actually takes place. And then, of course, there's, you know, you said it yourself, the holy instant or the Holy Spirit. The holy instant is, it's almost a laugh to call it instant, because that refers to time, and time doesn't exist, you know. But all right, so the holy instant is the instant or the part of time in which no other part is missing. It's not missing the future. It's not missing the past. All that really is just the present. Okay, so that's the holy instant, or the Holy Spirit is the entity, the spirit, which is missing no piece. It is complete in every respect. Mm-hmm. So that's where I go when, you know, I do holy, you know.
You know, maybe you know the source of this. Somewhere along the way, I stayed with this for quite a while. I had a nice awakening with it. A simple little phrase, Buddhist in nature. Maybe you recognize it and know the source. And it is not two, one. Not one, many. No, not many. One. Not one. Of course, two. No, not two. One. Well, not one, many, and so forth.
Right.
Oh my God, try that in a meditation and own each one of those. You know, for me, it was huge. I mean, obviously, it's me against the world. There's the two. There's, I'm aware of me, personally, and then there's everything else. God and you guys and everything I can think of. But really, that's only two. And then there's one, of course. The idea of oneness and unity dawns on you, and you're included, and it could only be one. You can't have two powers. Where does that stop? And then, of course, you know, the many is observable, and a celebration of freedom would be many and many, many, many more. All in the one, experienced in two, and so forth. Do you know anything about that, Tim?
I do not, although I eat my hat if it's not Japanese, it's Zen Buddhism.
Yeah, it's got to be Zen. Got to be somewhere in Zen.
But no, I don't know that directly.
Cool. I had a lot of fun with that one.
I can imagine.
Sundari, I got your mute. Can you tell us something about holiness? Is that one of the words that you use?
Yep. And I, like Tim and Ross, go to the W. It's feeling, living, being the whole. So holiness and with the W, holiness, are identical for me. And also the word holographic came up. All in me and I'm in all. Mm. And no private thoughts came up. Just today, a friend and I
emailed each other on the same exact issue at exactly the same moment, crisscrossing in space. Mm. And that happens to me a lot. I often get the messages before, as they're sent, before I open them, because of holiness.
Yeah.
Because of...
one mind.
Yeah. And for me, unholiness and separation are identical.
Aha.
And then what else came up was oneness. I and my brother are one. I and my father are one. And James Twyman had a movie, and the movie was called The Moses Code. And the whole of it came down to a biblical phrase, I am that I am. And the whole trip of the whole movie was it needed a comma. I am that I am. I am that I am. I am. I am that I am in the wholeness of what is. And the other little thread that came in was holiness is all that is infused with the divine, which is all that there is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Nice. Nice. Good, good. Judy, I got your mute. You just relax in bed. I got your mute for you.
He woke me up.
Yeah,
I'm
wake
kidding.
Up.
I'm kidding. I can tell you every word that's been said. You can quiz me. And in fact, I have to quote or credit the people before me in the sense of they've said much of what I was going to say. Whole, W or not, as a one that cannot be separated. When there is holiness, there cannot be separation. And it's the one root of that for me is reminding myself, I'm lucky me, I'm not a body. I'm completely free. I'm one. I'm not separate. What I also, let me just see. Oh, you asked, how do you know holiness? And for me, I have just a complete sense of peace. Just abject peace. and I can get there if I'll remember to be still an instant and go home. And there's the peace, there's the holiness. And I don't dwell a lot on what is unholiness, so I'd pass on that one.
Good, good. Well, it sounds like holiness to you is certainly an absolute. You said it cannot be separate or separated.
Right. Yep.
No wonder you go to peace when you think of holiness.
Mm.
How peaceful is that? Cannot be separated. Cannot be in conflict.
Right.
Good, good, good. Yeah, there's something beautiful about the absolute. Deborah, can you talk to us about holiness? What does it mean to you?
Well, I came up with two words, and each one stands alone, but I came up with divine beingness.
I like it.
And I don't have a lot of other words or explanation.
That's pretty strong. That's pretty strong, because you've got... Well, first you've got divine in there, and I love that sense of, you know, the beyond, the sorted, limited way of the world. And then you've got being, which I think is one of the biggest spiritual words that's underrated. Divine being, therefore, presence or it is. It's not just a concept when you say being. You see, it's easy to get too abstract when we go too far away from our own experience, which is why I think being is a good bridge on the spiritual journey. We can get into the readings and writings, and the absolute can be a trap. And we go too far away. We really are experiencing being. When I ask each one of you, Is there a you? Are you aware of you? Well, yes. If I say your name, you'll raise your hand. There really is an experience of being going on here. And so I like that. I like that divine beingness. I think it's beautiful. Good bridge. Good, good. Jason, are you talking to us tonight? I got your mute for a second. Are you there? Okay, let's put him. I remuted you.
Yeah, I was going to say that for me, it's no conflict without conflict.
Nice. Nice. Good. Well, we're all nicely aligned here on this nature of holiness. That's good. That's good. And now, the one who didn't get a chance to sit quietly and meditate, Masako.
Thank
what
you.
What does holiness mean to you?
See. Oh, you unmuted me. Yes.
Well, you are already unmuted.
Oh, really? Okay, great. Well, I'm learning to be concise. So when you said, what does holiness mean to you? I think of one of the lessons, my holiness blesses the world, right? And so I'm thinking, okay, what am I blessing them with?
Yes.
All right. So the answer for me, it's something that's changeless, something that's infinite, and deathless.
Nice. Nice! Touching in the direction of the absolute again. Very restful, very powerful. Good, good. Thank you. All right, everybody. Let's go take a look. Oh, yes, Sundari?
I was feeling feisty with your comments at the beginning don't wait for anything. There's only one teacher, yourself. And I guess the thing that came up for me when you were saying that was sort of a side idea that was conflicting with it, which for me was, I will take the last step, from the course. And the idea, we do have to claim it.
Who takes the last step in A Course in Miracles?
The source, Father.
Yeah, yeah. Just being clear.
Here's, the Sufi heart symbol, the heart with the two wings, and the wings are the wings of grace and self-effort. And I kept thinking of grace, and I kept thinking of how our spiritual and learning processes of every kind are, we put in effort, jump. And as grace strikes, and there is the necessity to claim enlightenment, to claim that I'm already here, to claim that there's nowhere I need to go. But it's not like you do it alone. It's so there was, you were saying it's all up to you, but there's grace. And so I wanted to, I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, it's good because, we're talking along the same path here. It's very important that you recognize grace will not come save you. Grace is everywhere waiting for you, but it will not come barge into your life and make you say the right thing and stop hating and stop worrying. It won't heal your cancer. it's not going to change your world. That's not what grace is, not such an actor. And yet you call grace a partner, Sundari, you have good company. You know what I mean? This is good company. So words are symbols here. So it sounds like we may be at odds, but I think you understand we're talking along the path of different levels of understanding and different levels of consciousness throughout this whole discussion. And so you certainly understand when I say that you're not a victim. I mean, for sure. I hope that's something that you have taken deeply into your awareness of what's going on. You're not a victim. But with that comes a responsibility, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Guess what? Oh, yeah, Ross, go ahead.
Well, I'm just thinking, you know, as I was hearing Sundari and then thinking about what you said, it just came up for me that what you didn't say was, well, yeah, nothing's going to come barge in. What's actually, to me, what seems to be the path it's going to is I'm going to realize the Roz character and everything he thinks about, including the course, has been irrelevant. I'm going to wake up out of the course and realize, oh, none of that was true. I'm actually outside of the whole dream, dreaming it. That's why nothing's going to come and save me, because the thing that I think is going to be saved is going to be woken up out of.
Here's the way I like to say that. Yeah. I like to say nothing's going to come save you, and you don't need to be saved.
Well, the small why you.
Exactly. That it's small why.
It's never going to change.
Well, hold on. The small why you can't be saved.
Right.
The big YOU does not need to be saved.
Right.
It's not threatened or vulnerable. So exactly what can you find that could be saved?
Right.
So, yeah, I'm totally with you, buddy. Yeah. Absolutely right.
You were totally hinting at it.
You felt it, right? Because that's it. Yes. Yes. Because that's where you are. That's beautiful. It's where you are.
Say it.
No, that's great. No, I sing that song a lot. I love it. I love it. And real quick, just for Ross, everybody jump to page 298, paragraph 7, sentence 1. Just because it's one of my favorite things when we get in a discussion Ross and I just had. I mean, there's other places, but I don't want to get too distracted. But 298, I just love it. It's a little humor. I think it's a little humor Jesus uses. So, Ross, read that first sentence on paragraph 7.
Well, you didn't unmute me. You cannot be your guide to miracles, for it is you who made them necessary.
Yeah. You cannot be your guide to miracles because it's you who made them necessary. There's a tight little circle around ego experience. Luann.
For me, that's what grace is knowing that I am that rather than this. And knowing that is what keeps me going towards becoming one in love with everybody.
Good, good, good. Yes, yes, indeed. Just the idea that there is a that. That there is a, what was it, Deborah? Divine being. Just that there is in your mind somewhere a place in your consciousness that's already owning a divine beingness. This is huge.
Right.
In fact, if you can really own that, it's your whole way out of the illusion. And along with what Ross was saying, which is a path I really, really love to describe. The character in the dream, the Course calls you a character in your own dream. And you've been dreaming around so many other characters, and now you start to wait to see what another character in your dream says about you so you can know how well you are. Yeah, exactly.
Can I tell a story? I want you to say how it relates, because I'm not sure. But I got a text from probably, other than my daughter, my best friend. And she said, I feel like the Course in Miracles is keeping you away from me. And because she doesn't have any concept of what I'm talking about when I'm talking about it. And I am... I'm the closest good friend of hers to her, except now I'm moving. So just the fact that I'm moving in her mind means I'm separating from her. And now she's blaming that on my studying the Course in Miracles. So I wrote back and said, what I'm hoping is that I can love you even more now without any, with only just love. That's what I wrote back. And it'll be a different kind of better relationship.
But, yeah. Yeah, you know, you can't, when somebody's feeling sorry for themselves, it's really hard to reach them. So what they're doing is they're calling for love. And the answer to a call for love is love. And how do you give love in a circumstance like that where somebody is saying they think something so important to you is getting in the way? You bypass the whole discussion. You bypass the whole, Course in Miracles is not something you just simply describe to somebody, right? You go right to the source of the matter, and you bring the love into the relationship right in that moment that's lacking. And here's what it might look like. Thank you. Thank you for bringing up how you feel, because you're important to me. And by no means, I think I'm closer to you because of Course in Miracles, because I don't have anything to argue with about you or about me. Course in Miracles is helping me away from fear in every regard and in guilt. And it helps me get closer to everybody, including you. Thank you for telling me how you feel, and I hope you see in me a better friend. You just say thank you. Thank you is such a great word. Thank you actually means I love you. I mean, when we practically, what does thank you mean? Thank you means I feel something from you that I want to give back to you some way, somehow. Do you see that beautiful circle? Isn't that what love is? Isn't love a desire to share what you have received or to give and receive? That's what thank you is. It's acknowledging the receipt and giving, because you acknowledge the receipt. It's beautiful. It's I love you, but it's the poor man's I love you, right? Don't worry about it. The effect is the same. So start any difficult conversation you have with thank you, and it will change the whole conversation. If it's a difficult conversation, it'll probably cut it down to a tenth of the length it was going to be. You start defending why you said thank you, and all sorts of great stuff's going to come out of your mouth. Instead of big you. Thank you instead. It's what you mean if you really look at it, because somebody has communicated to you. You should always be grateful for that. Somebody has reached out to you with the communication. That's all that matters. That's how the Holy Spirit sees it. Even if it started with some swear words and then ending in your name, that's still something to be thankful for, because the communication has occurred. The worst is when they don't say anything and you find out later. That's worse than them actually talking to you. Good, good, good. All right. Everybody, turn in the text to chapter 17, page 368. And this will work nicely with what Luann just said. Page 368 in the text. Now, what's nice about this paragraph is it's kind of a universal paragraph. It applies to all sorts of things in your life. All sorts of things are given a perspective with this paragraph. It could be work. It could be relationship. It could be illness. I mean, it's amazing how universal some of these things are. What a gift we have with this book and with its teaching, that it can apply to all these different parts of our life. Let's see, where are we? So Luann, I got your mute. Would you read for us that paragraph 3 on page 368?
A situation is a relationship being the joining of thoughts. If problems are perceived, it is because the thoughts are judged to be in conflict. But if the goal is truth, this is impossible. Some ideas of bodies must have entered, for minds cannot attack. The thought of bodies is a sign of faithlessness. For bodies cannot solve anything. It is their intrusion on the relationship, an error in your thoughts about the situation, which then becomes the justification for your lack of faith. You will make this error, but be not at all concerned with that. The error does not matter. Faithlessness brought to faith will never interfere with truth, but faithlessness used against truth will always destroy faith. If you lack faith, ask that it be restored where it was lost, and seek not to have it made up to you elsewhere, as you had been unjustly deprived of it. No, as if you had been unjustly deprived of it.
Okay. So this is by way of introduction to the next paragraph. But it
Which
really
is why when you said to say thank you, that eliminates the distance.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes. Beautifully. It's not defending yourself. It's the opposite of what they're expecting. It's the opposite of what the ego would do. So, yes. Do not let your words advertise faithlessness. Rather, in any situation, look for what you can trust. Look for some honesty. And you will have that starting to come back to you. It's contagious. When people are honest and trusting, it's contagious. You start to feel it, and you kind of want to be more honest yourself. All right. Well, here's what I really meant, okay? And now you're getting somewhere in your conversation. You can then start to join instead of separate with your thoughts, with such things. But if it's not going so well and things are getting more difficult and it's falling apart or you're scared, fear is a really good sign that you're listening to the ego. When this happens, you can be sure in the middle of this paragraph, look at sentence 5. He calls it right out. You're like, Jesus. Maybe you said that. Jesus, like a swear word. I was waiting for you to get back to your main teaching in this book. There it is. The thought of bodies is the sign of faithlessness. You see, bodies turn out to be the perfect home for the ego. What does the body need? What is the body? How is the body treated? What is the worry you have? It's going to be related to your body and your body identity. So it's a sure sign that you've got yourself mired into the ego again.
You know, when I read that paragraph, that was the one line I didn't quite understand. Because I don't know what faithlessness means, I guess, that there is a way for her and I to separate. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, there's a way for you to separate. Sure, you could deny her. No. But see, your faithlessness means there's no chance of you two having a relationship and a oneness. I mean, it's broken already. That's what she's doing. She's starting to voice her faithlessness in your relationship. Hmm. And if you believe it, then you are adding your faithlessness to it. But if you deny, if you bring only your faith, if you bring your trust, if you bring your trust with you, then she will find that you don't believe it. You're not defending. You're not saying, hey, what about last week when I came over and celebrated your birthday with you? What about that? This isn't the way to go. Only pure trust. Have the Holy Spirit teach you to trust and bring only that with your, bring the faith with your words and with your confidence. And then they'll start to shake off their worries immediately. And thank you is a great way to do it. Sundari.
Thank you.
Well, if right here, right now, I'm having trouble thinking of what I could say to my neighbors with a thank you. And, like I could thank the fuck you, die, die guy for his beautiful dance. But, I really...
Watch sarcasm. It's an attack.
No, but that is actually true.
Mm, yeah.
I mean that's actually true. That I saw it as beautiful at the time.
I sure enjoyed your story.
Yeah. But, it's been like so long and so brutal and such a constant barrage. And the one thing that I think to thank them for is that I'm probably less attached to other people's feelings than when I went into this process. It's probably been like really good at making me thicker skinned, but that isn't something I could
add. I think you can do better. I mean, I get you and I'm glad you have that, but I think you can do better.
Say something about not even my situation, but if you're like a process to work with looking to for what to say the thank you for.
Yes. Very good, Sundari. Stay with that. And see if you can pick something that's shared. Not just how you benefited, but maybe how both of you benefited from the situation. You work on it because it's adjoining we're talking about. And it will help. If you can come up with something, come up with the top three. Start with five. It's work. But they'll start popping up. And you got one already, but there are more. And this is a way to break down the ego's defensiveness. Ego's so quickly judgmental and so quickly defensive. It says, well, they're horrible and I'm great. Yeah. Yeah. So compassion is needed. And do a compassion meditation and join in the situation. And you will find there's all sorts of things for you to be thankful for. And this will help. Yeah. Oh, we get to hear how that goes. Okay, so in this case, and for Sundari as well, if you are searching for something to be thankful for that has to do with your body, it won't be as powerful. It should be something to do with your mind and with the whole situation. Much better. Much better. Less particular and more embracing will be received better. And Jesus is going right to the worst problem you've ever had in your life. And it keeps coming up again and again and again. Jesus goes right to it. I mean, the book would be so long if you tried to go through each of your, all your lesser problems. The book would be so long. I mean, oh man, we'd need volumes to describe A Course in Miracles and your work environment. A Course in Miracles and child rearing. A Course in Miracles. No. Let's just go to the very problem, the core problem that has plagued you your entire life since before you could remember. And it will be with you perhaps even beyond your life if you don't wake up. He just goes right to it. He calls it out. He calls it out and uses it as the teaching post, as the one classroom and lesson that you have struggled with your entire life. And can be, if you can get through this one block, then you will automatically, through your exposure and readiness for truth, reveal to yourself. You don't need A Course in Miracles. Your simple sense for holiness that we were just talking about will take over. if you can get past this one block, which A Course in Miracles, thankfully, goes right at it and never lets up. And there it is, right there in this paragraph. It's in sentence 5. It says, the idea of bodies must have entered. He says, if you've got some difficulty of it, it's not your mind. And I'll make a distinction for you here. It's very important. Bodies come with, you know, body minds. All your attention, everything you got can be focused on the wellness of your body. Like when you were a teenager, remember?
No. I don't remember.
Body, mind, and then now you have a spirit mind. And you're trying to learn to prefer, with the help of the Holy Spirit, your spirit mind orientation and thoughts and leadership and grace. And to have less attention on the body mind, which just worries. It actually, all it does is worry. It gets clever about worrying. Sometimes it gets a whole education and a career based on worry. A whole relationship, a marriage, kids, based on worry. You know what I'm talking about. So, you see, as it says right here, it says, the thought of bodies is a sign of faithlessness. Jesus is going right at it. Bodies are victims, folks. Bodies are victims to gravity, to hunger, to age, to pain, etc. Perfect home for the ego. Wow. So this is a sign of faithlessness. Faithless, faith in what? Holiness. There's no room for holiness in the body. It's separate. It's a picture of separation. And as the Course beautifully describes, you know what the Course, Jesus shortens up on page 425 in the workbook into a single little sentence. The bottom line, let's go there. Hold your finger here because we're coming right back. Turn, let's go find out what Jesus thinks about the body real quick. Turn to page 425 in the workbook. Just want to show you this sentence real quick. Look at 425. It's in the first paragraph. And he just points out, he says, we have to read the first three sentences to get the key phrase. He says, the body, if everybody there, you there, page 425 in the workbook, you got to see this. Okay. He says, this is what is the body. He says, the body is a fence. The Son of God imagines he is built to separate parts of his capital S self, holy self, divine self, one self, from other parts. It is within this fence he thinks he lives, to die as it decays and crumbles. For within this fence, he thinks that he is safe from love. The perfect home for the ego would separate you off and keep you safe from love. But that's why you made it. So that you experience the separation and see what you can do with it. That's not a problem. That's not evil. That doesn't change anything. That's no problem at all. Problem is you've identified with it now, with your own dream. All right, that's a problem. We're going to fix that. You have to fix that. Okay. This is a great section right there. Okay, back to page 368, where he's calling it out again. Look how he says in sentence 5, he says, the thought of bodies is a sign of faithlessness, for bodies cannot solve anything. Bodies don't think. Bodies don't hope. Bodies do not create. Bodies do not love. They don't actually don't do anything. They're servants. It is their intrusion, the body's intrusion, on your relationship, an error in your thoughts about the situation, which then becomes a justification for your lack of faith. You're putting your faith in something that is not at all a decision maker. Okay, let's jump ahead a little bit in interest of time. Ross, I'm going to get your mute if it's convenient. Would you read for us Amazing Paragraph 4?
Only what you have not given can be lacking in any situation. But remember this, the goal of holiness was set for your relationship and not by you. You did not set it because holiness cannot be seen except through faith. And your relationship was not holy because your faith in your brother was so limited and little. Your faith must grow to meet the goal that has been set. The goal's reality will call this forth, for you will see that peace and faith will not come separately. What situation can you be in without faith and remain faithful to your brother?
Very good. So you have to recognize that holiness is invisible. I dare say all things that are true are invisible. Or on page 368 in the text, paragraph 4, 368. All things turn, it turns out, I mean, when you really investigate, you don't have to go far. But the things that are really true, not just, okay, not facts. Facts tend to change, right? Is it a fact, even a fact, that today is Thursday? My calendar does, but, you know, we had a guy in Australia on this group not too long ago, and he's, no, it's Friday, mate. It is Friday. Yeah, facts and on it, oh boy. But the truth, when you start to seek for the tests of truth and the universality of truth, boy, you throw away a lot of things that could ever be argued about, and life becomes much simpler. And so does your spiritual journey.
Andrew?
Yeah.
Can you perceive holiness?
Can you perceive holiness? Well, you cannot perceive.
Because if you can perceive it, then it changes. And if it changes, it's not real.
Right. You cannot perceive holiness. However, you can know holiness, and knowledge is not perception. So good question.
Capital K.
Yes. Yes. Good question. You do not perceive it. It is not something to be judged. All perception requires judgment.
Yeah.
Even perception of whether or not that's your kid out there in the distance. What? Luann?
Isn't it true then that to obtain that knowledge, you have to have removed your blocks?
Certainly in that instant you do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because when I'm closest to feeling or sensing or knowing love is when there are no blocks. And what I found right now for myself is time is my biggest block.
Yes.
If I think through the quality of time, And it's, I'm not getting anywhere. I have to let go of that idea.
You sure do. That's a good ego loves this little invention of time.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so great. It works so well with space to make separation play out. You know, for the ego, space exists so that time exists so that everything doesn't happen at once. You could spread it, and then space exists so it doesn't all happen to you. It's perfect. This dance of time and space is great in separation. Yeah, you definitely, it's part of the awakening that has to occur. That's correct. And the book has loads and loads on time. Well, I wish we had time, so to speak, to take you to my favorite passage on time, but we don't. But we will, I'm sure, many other times, and we probably have before.
Right.
Okay, so this is a really important. Paragraph 4, it says, only what you have not given can be lacking in any situation. Hello, you're responsible, ultimately. Don't be waiting for somebody else to bring the love that you hope to find in a conversation or in your own mind or in a relationship or in your home or on your street. Don't be waiting for somebody else to bring the love that you hope to find there and that you insist is there. If only the blocks could be removed. Look at it, black and white. Page 368, paragraph 4, sentence 1. Only what you have not given can be lacking in any situation. And by the way, when A Course in Miracles uses words like any, it means any. It does not use these universal qualifiers lightly. And I've been trying to break the book ever since I picked it up. Well, the first 10 years that I picked it up. I kept taking sentences like this and say, all right, wait a minute. What about when? What about situations that involve, and I would try to break the book so I didn't have to read it and pay attention and do all the lessons again. But I couldn't break it. The more I just sit and receive this message holistically, the more beautiful and loving and supportive it is for my own personal love and awakening. So take these words any literally. The sooner you do, the simpler your life will become. Okay. Great. All right. Great. How much time do we have? Good. All right. Now, let's go to page 448, and let's touch on what we're studying before we dig into it further. And so, Tim, when you get there, would you read for us the entire paragraph 2 on text page 448.
448, my captain.
Mm-hmm.
Coming in. 45, 47, 48. You said paragraph 2.
Yes, sir.
This is the only thing that you need do for vision, happiness, release from pain, and the complete escape from sin, all to be given you. Say only this, but mean it with no reservations, for here the power of salvation lies. I am responsible for what I see. I choose the feelings I experience, and I decide upon the goal I would achieve. And everything that seems to happen to me, I ask for and receive as I have asked. Deceive yourself no longer that you are helpless in the face of what is done to you. Acknowledge, but that you have been mistaken, and all effects of your mistakes will disappear.
And then read us one more sentence from the next paragraph.
It is impossible the Son of God be merely driven by events outside of
him. I mean, black and white, there it is, full stop. This is teaching you what's the truth. Whew. Ultimately, you couldn't have better news. But along the way, you might fight with this a bit. Like, for example, look at that word, the big R word in the first sentence of the attack, responsible. Well, in a lower level consciousness, responsible means you're guilty. At a lower level of consciousness, it means you're guilty. And you can read this with the ego in tow and make you responsible for all the hell in your life. And you're like, what? How's this good news? I'm responsible for the divorce. I'm responsible for the cancer. I'm responsible for the fight. I'm responsible for doing poorly at work. I'm responsible for etc. Blaming you for not being a better person. That's a lower level consciousness. The ego can do that to you. But of course, if you made it this far in the book, you're looking for love a little more than that. I hope. Then the word responsibility, as you go up, as you start rising up the levels of teaching on this, responsibility suddenly at some point changes meaning. And responsibility now means freedom. Hey, you are responsible. Guess what? Good news. It's not up to anybody else but you, and you get to do it whenever you feel like it. And you already did, proving you have the power. Responsibility here could be really, really good news. Celebrating the power and how close you are to the solution to any problem you might have. If it's up to you. Tim.
You started using the word power, I think, three times in three sentences. So responsibility, as you climb the ladder, becomes equivalent to empowered.
Yes. Listening. Yes.
That's it.
That's one of the ways to look at A Course in Miracles. You know, what is this book? Luann's friend says, what is that book that you're reading? You know, one of the ways to look at A Course in Miracles is really self-empowerment. Self. Real self. The opposite of self-empowerment is victim, right? This is a book all about how you're not a victim and you never have been. And you can't be a victim when you start to understand what you really are. Empowerment. Yes, sir. Beautiful, Tim. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, okay. So what do we have?
Andrew, can I say something?
Oh, please do.
Yeah. Thank you. When I, you're talking about responsibility, and for me, I have an intention to meet life from a place of appreciation, approval, and acknowledgement. So when I run into a conflict or an adversity with another person, and when I am blessed enough to know that I'm triggered, that there is a shift in my thought that I say, okay, all right, so look for the good in this person, right? And when that happens, I have already turned my focus on blah, 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 blah. What an idiot, you know, blah, 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 blah. From, my God, tell me, you know, I'm reaching out to you. Tell me, you know, what are you upset about? Can you talk to me about that? And that is such an awesome way to interact with people, because this is, you know, my experience, is that number one, I am being generous and knowing that what I do to myself is also benefits, right? Because we're all one, that I'm actually honoring myself by honoring them. Tell me more. And people as human beings love that their voice, what they're saying, is really heard and understood. And when they feel that, wow, all of a sudden they open up and they are freed up.
Yes.
And the connection happens naturally and spontaneously. And so that's
and also you're coming when you do that, you're coming from a genuine desire to share, to join, to understand. Mm-hmm. Seek to understand before you seek to be understood. It's so much a better way to work with a fragile situation, for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Masako. Hey, well, let's do what we can with the time we have left. You can drop this page because we're running out of time, but let's go to workbook page 281. We're going to dig in a little further on this responsibility thing. It's all over the book. It's part of your healing. Your healing. This is on the top of the page. It says lesson 152. The bottom of the page, it says 281 in the workbook. And so, Masako, when you get there, would you begin reading for us?
Absolutely. Lesson 152, the power of decision is my own. No one can suffer loss unless it be his own decision. No one suffers pain except his choice elects this state for him. No one can grieve, nor fear, nor think him sick unless these are the outcomes that he wants. And no one dies without his own consent.
What? Could you read that again? Did you read that right? Come on. Masako, quit making stuff up. We're being serious here.
No one dies without his own consent.
This is in your book. It's in black and white. And when you're ready for it, of course. Please continue.
Nothing occurs but represents your wish, and nothing is omitted that you choose. Here is your world, complete in all details. Here is its whole reality for you, and it is only here salvation is.
There's the good news. It goes describing the whole paragraph that all the suffering that you've ever experienced is because of your decisions, and you don't suffer, you don't get hurt, you don't even die without your wish to do so. And then, beautiful last sentence, and it's only here salvation is. Of course. Yes. Yes. It must be true that the exact same tool that you use to get yourself into this mess, you will use to get yourself out of this mess. And you will laugh all the way home. For sure. The power of decision is indeed your own. This is to be celebrated. You're not a victim. And then, Deborah, when you're ready, would you read for us paragraph 2? Look at Jesus coming right at you.
You may believe that this position is extreme and too inclusive to be true. Yet can truth have exceptions? If you have the gift of everything, can loss be real?
Wow, that's worth a meditation right there. You'd have to ask yourself, could you believe that somehow you have the gift of everything? What does that mean, the gift of everything? And if you can accept that even for a moment, if you can have a holy instant, even for a moment, that everything is already given to you, not the one you see in the mirror. That poor person is going to suffer and die soon enough. No, we're talking about you. The you that matters. This is worthy of a meditation, that one sentence. Oh my goodness. It begins with the word gift. It continues with the word everything. It implies a you that is not the one in the mirror, which is the whole reason why you're meditating in the first place. That old body thing, right? Going to drop that body association, I hope. Well, you're well on your way. The single sentence carries you even further, because now that it says the gift of everything, then it touches on the addiction of the ego. The four-letter word that starts with L, loss. Loss. The ego is completely fixated on what it's going to lose. It has no positive thoughts at all. Mm-hmm. But if you were paying attention in the first part of the sentence, and that was where your meditation was focusing, you could actually wake up from loss all in this one sentence. This is worthy of a meditation. Beautiful, beautiful. Please continue.
Can pain be part of peace or grief of joy? Can fear and sickness enter in a mind where love and perfect holiness abide? Truth must be all-inclusive if it be the truth at all. Accept no opposites and no exceptions, for to do so is to contradict the truth entirely.
I just gave you a quick definition of the truth. Harkening back to page 1 of A Course in Miracles, where the truth was laid out in a metaphysical sentence that's too simple to deny. You want to see it real quick? Everybody jump to the front of the book, the introduction. You remember this, I'm sure. The introduction is like page 1. If it had a page number, it would be page 1 in the text. And I want you to just look at the middle of the page. In your book, it's going to have an 8 on that sentence. It says, the opposite of love is fear. Acknowledging your experience. How loving for the teacher to meet you where you are. And he clears his throat, mustering as much respect as he can for you lost, you little lost sheep, you, who believes in fear. He says, but look, love, you know, what is all encompassing, it can't have an opposite. I know you think it does. I know this fear seems real to you. But the nature of love is completely all encompassing. Even you are love. So from the very start of the book, it sets out with this constant message of the all-encompassing nature of love, and that the opposite doesn't exist and has no power. Even the opposite that we try to make with our ego, even the opposite we try to make with our ego ends up being defined by love. The opposite would be fear, right? Fear is only because you're not feeling love. There's no other way to describe fear because it's an absence. You can't describe something based on nothing. What's the solution to fear? Whatever words come out of your mouth, they're going to sound pretty loving. Well, comfort and security and belonging and purpose and, yeah, love. The only thing that matters. It all points that direction. Okay, let's continue we were completely out of time. We have to read just one more paragraph if you'll indulge me. If you got to go, I understand. Let's just pick up one more paragraph. And we're back up to the top now. Luann, would you read for us paragraph 3? On page 281 in your workbook.
Oh, okay. Paragraph 1?
Paragraph 3.
3, sorry. Salvation is the recognition that truth is true and nothing else is true. This you have heard before, but may not yet accept both parts of it. Without the first, the second has no meaning. Without the second, is the first no longer true. Truth cannot have an opposite. This cannot be too often said and thought about. For what is not true is true as well as what is true, then part of truth is false. And truth has lost its meaning. Nothing but the truth is true. And what is false is false.
A bunch of Course in Miracles circular speak. So do you really know that he's talking about is a simple message that in fact, you're not a victim. The power of decision is your own. And when you go into meditation, when you go to find your present moment, and you will find your mind is ready, willing, and able to choose a peaceful thought instead. Always available is the Holy Spirit to weigh in on whatever situation you got going. The power of decision is your own. It will not be made for you. That's the bad news. The good news is it's already made. If you just stop making you stop choosing the ego, the Holy Spirit's instantly there. Please choose peace first, and then go about your day tomorrow. Always take a moment. The power of decision is your own. You will discover more and more power in your own mind as your mind really is. It's the creator on the spot. You will get what you think every single time. Thank you, thank you. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me. There's so much more to cover. We're going to come back to page 448 yet again next week. And we'll look at another level of teaching on that page. So good, good. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Andrew.